This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And we've got a lot of topics to talk about. First of all, the Joker not in the Australia Open. And, you know, everybody who has not heard this story, he got denied his visa twice because he's unvaccinated. And Australia said, you know what, dude, you got to go. So, but there's a lot of money involved because you're talking about the number one player, the defending champ of the Australian Open, and Scar, a lot of Serbs are not happy with what happened because obviously Djokovic, that's his home country.
Yeah, and we had seen protests in Australia hoping that the government would let him enter the country, and this is kind of the culmination of everything. But I feel like there were a lot of self-inflicted missteps along the way, right? Because his team was not exactly clear with the fact that he did not follow all the rules. And it turns out that he was showing up in different places even after he had found out he tested positive. There's just a lot of things that are coming out of the woodwork now that we have a timeline of what happened.
Yeah, I agree with you, Scar. And Lynchy, I agree also that the thing I think that really nailed his, you know what, to the wall was when it came out that he did this media shoot and he knew he was positive, but he went anyway.
Djokovic is one of those athletes that hasn't heard the word no for an awful long time. He basically, because of who he is and his success, gets his way. But he's not going to get his way and didn't get his way in Australia. Scotty Morrison, I give a tip of the cap to him for saying, I'm sorry, you violated our rules. You knew what they were. They were crystal clear when you came in. Now, there's some huge financial implications here. The winner of the Australian Open gets nearly $3 million, $2.875 million. If he's in the finals, $1.5 million. Semifinals, $900,000. And if he played in the doubles and won the doubles in the singles, he could have won nearly $5 million. He also has $41 million in endorsement deals, and the biggest one is Lacoste, the alligator shirts. He gets $9 million a year from Lacoste, and Lacoste has come out and said they're going to review the situation. And then there's the French Open, looming in May, which has come out with some very strict protocols and rules for coming into their country
there
as well. So this is just the financial impact of the Australian Open. It could just compound itself by the time we get to May.
Yeah. Let's not forget also the political backdrop here, because there's an election in May in Australia, and Scott Morrison, the prime minister, was also kind of stoking voters' sympathies, support with appeals to tough border enforcement with the way that he handled the Djokovic situation. So there are other motivations in the backdrop here, but certainly what happened with Djokovic touched on kind of everything that's getting people upset right now.
Let's move now to hockey and a couple of hockey stories. Premier Hockey Federation announced a $25 million investment with aims to boost salaries and the sport. That is a story that is out of the Globe. And earlier, a few months ago, we had a chance to talk with the commissioner of the league, Tyler Tumania, and what she had to say.
We really have to align ourselves with partners that really understand what we're trying to do here. It takes a true partner to come in on top of our ownerships that really float us on the operational level, but to grow this to the next level, to get the viewership up that we need, to understand that the partners that come in as our sponsors in order to grow revenue, that will have a direct impact, in particular with our federation, has a major impact on that salary cap.
This is a league that had rebranded from the National Women's Hockey League last summer to Premier Hockey Federation to be more inclusive, to include trans players as well. And it's notable that this announcement is coming before the Winter Olympics, because that is when women's hockey really shines. The U.S. team, the Canadian team, they're always battling it out for the gold medal at the Winter Olympics.
And I remember that conversation we had with Tyler back in October, and she said we need more eyeballs on the sport. And the Olympics certainly gets more eyeballs than anybody else. And right now they have a $25 million infusion from the owners, and they have a nice new deal with ESPN+. They have a deal with TSN up in Canada. They have a deal with trading cards. And they're going to expand to two more teams in two more cities, and one of them is going to be Montreal, which is going to be huge for them, because now they'll have two teams in Canada. They'll have Toronto, and they'll have Montreal. And most of the cities are located in the Northeast. There's one that's in St. Paul, which, of course, is a great hockey hotbed. But this, right now, I
almost
think...
almost feels like the original six, in a way.
It does. You know, I was thinking the exact same thing. Exact same thing, Scarlett. I met a woman, Jillian Dempsey. She plays for the Boston Pride. Mike Aruzioni introduced me to her. Last winter, and she's a fifth grade teacher in Winthrop, a job that she absolutely loves. But she needs that job to supplement the income that she's getting from the current contract. It's going to double next year. And maybe Jillian will still be able to teach school, but she won't have to teach school if she doesn't want to.
Yeah, the salary cap for each team goes up to $750,000, which is more than double what it had been as they add these two expansion franchises.
I've had my wrist slapped by the higher-ups because I get opinionated about this, and I still don't understand why in the hell we've got this problem of such a wide gap of salaries between the men and the women.
They're going to bring up broadcasting contracts and rights and, of course, sponsorship and how that plays into everything, but it's got to start somewhere.
Good. Now I kept that right down the middle. So they, but anyway.
Barb patting himself on the back for being restrained.
You have to bring up Willie O'Ree here. They retired
Legend.
His jersey. Yes. And it really was something. He wore number 22. The Boston Bruins retired the jersey. Willie O'Ree was the first black player to appear in an NHL game. And this goes way back in 1958, Lynchy. This was something to see, and he said something about what it was like to play when he was introduced in 1958, and having to go through being a person of color in the league at that time.
I got it from the fans, the racial remarks and slurs from the opposing players, but I just let it went in one ear and out the other.
And I got to say, Lynchy, bless him, because I don't think I could do that.
I tell you, I had the good fortune being here in Boston to interview Willie O'Ree a few years ago, and one of the most remarkable characters I've ever met in my life. He actually got hit with a puck in playing junior hockey and was legally blind in one eye. Mm. And he convinced his family and his doctor not to tell anybody because he knew it was hard enough as a black person trying to crack the color barrier in the National Hockey League. He didn't want to have something else working against him. So he kept that inside him. And he told stories of some of the vicious comments that were coming back. But his teammates, especially Johnny Busick on the Bruins, were very supportive and welcoming to him. It was too bad he couldn't make the trip. He's 86 years old. He lives in San Diego. I watched live here in Boston last night when they raised the number 22 to the banner. And we don't take raising numbers to the banners lightly here in Boston. There's some pretty big names up there, like Bobby Orr and Johnny Busick and Bill Russell and John Havlicek and Larry Bird. So Willie O'Ree is right up there in the rafters of the Garden with everybody else, and rightly so. And since 1998, he's been the National Hockey League's diversity ambassador and has done a wonderful job. And he's also known by his trademark fedora. And the Bruins team this year sent him one, a nice fedora, and on the side of it, it has the banner that they raised to the rafters. It's really cool.
And it's not just the Boston Bruins that are celebrating Willie O'Ree, right? I mean, it is all the players around the league. You had a lot of them appear in a pregame video tribute. Ryan Reeves of the Rangers, Matthew Joseph of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Wayne Simmonds of the Maple Leafs. I mean, they were all saluting him for breaking that color barrier.
This will make Lynchy feel better. I had a Bobby Orr hockey card.
Ooh.
And I put it in a book to protect it.
Uh-oh.
And the book, unfortunately, got thrown out by mistake by my father. And I said, "Dad, what'd you do?" He said, "What?
I cleaned up."
Yeah, he did. He said, "I cleaned up." It was an old school book from when I was in the fourth grade or something about math. And he threw it out. He said, you know, and my father, God bless him, God rest his soul, he said, "Boy, what you want that book for?" I said, "Look, you threw away a Bobby Orr card." Yeah. To which he replied, "Who's Bobby Orr?" To where I stomped out of the house.
Well, the next time we have a trading card expert on, we're going to ask him about the value of that car and then listen to Michael Barr, the thud, when he hits the ground.
Yeah,
in the studio.
What could have been?
You've been listening to the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I'm Michael Barr. You can follow me at Big Barr Sports on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Mike Lynch. You can follow me at LynchyWCBB.
You are listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio around the world. And by the way, you can catch our podcast wherever, because that's the way we roll.